From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Friday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready, and an interview-heavy show for you today. We're going to talk with Memphis Tigers basketball beat writer Mark Giannotto, also the co-host of Giannotto and Jeffrey, as you are mostly aware of. We'll talk Ole Miss Memphis in that, and then we'll also have a ton of football content with Ryan Brown. You know him from Birmingham Radio. We used to have him on the show for Friday, so it's good to have him back as well for a lengthy interview here on the Oxford Exxon Podcast, brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. You know, to turn your ticket into a coupon from basketball season, you just take it by the Oxford Crystal right there next to the Oxford Exxon, $150 off a sack full or a steamer pack with the Oxford Crystal and the tickets from the pavilion. So take advantage of that. We're also coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio, 662-257-1900. Give Corey Clark a call during business hours, 15 minutes for a quote. You know that he wants to be your truck guy, wants to be your car guy, and he will take care of you. Give it a shot, even if you're not ready for a vehicle right now. If you're just starting the process, make sure you give Corey a call there on Highway 25 South in Amory. And we'll go ahead and kick it off right now. We'll go first to Mark Giannotto to talk some Ole Miss Memphis basketball.
Mark Giannotto joins us now on the podcast. Mark covers University of Memphis for the Memphis Commercial Appeal, columnist there. Also co-hosts the Giannotto and Jeffrey show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Mark, thanks for taking a few minutes on what I know is a busy day.
Yeah, no problem. Nothing going on up here in Memphis. Nothing at all.
So looking back on it, and I know you wrote this in a column, Memphis obviously made a critical judgment mistake on this, right? Now that you've talked to some people, the decision's been made, what were they thinking with the strategy that they went with when they initially were told, hey, this guy's ineligible, and then they decided they're going to play him anyway?
Well, I think what Memphis felt by challenging the NCAA, they could get a more lenient punishment, I think. And, you know, they could get the court of public opinion on their side, which they did, and they could use that as leverage against the NCAA, where I think they probably made a mistake is so they go in and James files the lawsuit, and even though Memphis is named as a nominal defendant in it, I think James, you know, had the university's backing in all of this, and they file the lawsuit, and then they didn't really go all in. They filed the lawsuit, and then last Thursday, because they basically wanted to reach a settlement. So they basically kind of didn't pick a strategy to go with. And while challenging the NCAA in a lawsuit was risky, you did have the chance of you win the lawsuit in court. And that, to me, would probably force the NCAA to it wouldn't allow the NCAA to really bring the hammer down. Now, at the same time, if you go forward with the lawsuit and lose, you know, you're going to get, you know, the NCAA is going to take no mercy on you. But instead, what they did is they antagonized the NCAA by filing this lawsuit and then playing James Wiseman, even though the NCAA had told them already he was likely ineligible. And then they pulled the lawsuit and tried to work out a settlement, it appears. And it appears, at least from yesterday's ruling, that this is a 12-game suspension and the school's appealing it, that there was some miscommunication, let's put it, between the university and the NCAA in terms of what sort of settlement they were going to reach on this. Because my guess is, in retrospect, if they knew James Wiseman was going to get suspended for 12 games, I don't think James pulls the lawsuit. So there were a lot of mistakes made here by the university. I think Ole Miss fans can relate in some ways, in the sense that you know, nothing here that Dense did feels right. Like, it just, they're punishing this kid, James Wiseman, who, from what we understand, did nothing wrong here. He had no knowledge of this payment Penny Hardaway gave to his mother, and he just wants to play basketball. And he's the one feeling the brunt of this punishment because the NCAA has these outdated, antiquated policies that don't make sense in a lot of cases. And then also the adults here on the Memphis side, whether it's the university administration, whether it's Penny Hardaway, I think in a lot of ways let him down in terms of putting him in this situation where he's being pulled in multiple directions. And he ultimately, like I said, ultimately he's the one who's suffering more than anyone in all of this.
Obviously, I could talk NCAA stuff for hours. We don't have hours, and you've got a show to do. But moving forward for this team, obviously the season continued last night. As we tape this on I guess there are people going to hear this on Friday morning. Two nights ago, they play Ole Miss tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon. How much of a distraction is the Wiseman situation, in your opinion? And then how much of a distraction is some of the reporting that, hey, this could be the beginning of a full-blown NCAA investigation into that program?
Yeah, it's hard to tell right now. You know, like, yes, against Little Rock on Wednesday night, you know, they went the first 6 minutes of the game, basically, without scoring a point. And you just assumed, sitting there courtside, like, this makes sense. They're distracted. This ruling came down 3 hours ago, and they're distracted. Well, you talk to, I don't know if you, I believed them necessarily, but after the game, Precious Achiuwa and DJ Jeffries both said, oh, we didn't even know about the ruling yet. And like, it was a reporter told them during the press conference that it was a 12-game suspension. So I'm not sure yet. I would say this Ole Miss game is going to be a better indication of whether this has been a what sort of distraction this is, just because this feels like it might be the first game where they truly understand, I guess, the weight of what might be coming, if you will. But, you know, it's interesting. I don't know. To me, the problem isn't necessarily the distraction part. It's the not having James on the court part, because when he's played this year, he's looked awesome. And the team, for the most part, has looked like a completely different team when he's on the court. He fills a lot of the holes that the rest of the roster has, and that makes sense because he's, you know, potentially the number one pick in next year's NBA draft. But so to me, more than the distraction, it's just not having him out there that's going to be the problem.
That's what I was going to get to next, Mark, is the fact that he's not out there, that games are to be played, and I would assume that a lot of the way that this team was built around James Wiseman. That certainly makes sense. He is, as you said, arguably the best player coming into the draft next year, quite possibly the very first pick in the draft, no lower than number three in all likelihood. I mean, he is an elite NBA franchise sort of player. Without him on the floor, how good is this Memphis team, and how do they sort of readjust to not having him? How different of a team are they stylistically without Wiseman than they were with him?
I don't know if they're different stylistically. They just, you don't have that. He's a great rim protector. He's a great rebounder. And he's just a fantastic safety valve on offense. That you can just throw the ball up to him and he can go get you something. And he draws a ton of attention, which frees up your shooters. So they're different in that way. They just don't have that. And what this Memphis team so far, they were billed as being a better shooting team than your typical Memphis team when they added Lester Quinones and Boogie Ellis, and then they have Tyler Harris as well coming back. But so far this season, that has not translated. They have not shot the ball well from outside. And so that, to me, is going to be a key in this Ole Miss game, like how their guards can stand up, because obviously Ole Miss has good guards, and how their guards compete with the Ole Miss guards, and can they knock down some outside shots? Because, you know, basically they've played four games without James at this point, two exhibition games, and then a game against Alcorn State, and then the game the other night against Little Rock. And I would say in three of the four, the two exhibition games and the Little Rock game, they haven't looked great without James. They played well against Alcorn State without James. And so this will be obviously the biggest challenge yet without James in the lineup, and they're gonna have to play better. I think, you know, DJ Jeffries has been probably the most consistent player other than James on the team. He's been really good and kind of a super sub off the bench, one of those like six men who plays starter minutes. And then Precious Achiuwa has had moments where he's looked like, you know, has resembled the lottery pick he's billed to be, but he's also been pretty inconsistent. But when he gets going, and he seems to have an easier time getting going when James isn't out there so far, he's been a guy who can really get to the free throw line a lot. So that's what I expect them. I expect them to play through Precious and DJ, but also they're going to need some of these guys to hit some open shots. And I think you can expect they're going to, even with or without James, they are going to play stylistically. They want to play a frantic pace, getting up and down the floor, you know, probably a lot of press. And we'll see how Ole Miss handles it. Cause like I said, they've got good, you know, as you know, Ole Miss has good guards. And I think this will be an interesting challenge for Memphis, particularly with James not in the lineup.
Yeah, it's fascinating because what you described with the shooting with Memphis sounds very similar to Ole Miss. Ole Miss, through four games, has defended at an elite level, and they have not played well on the offensive end, in large part because they just don't make shots. And I think for them to beat Memphis, they've got to step into FedEx Forum and make shots. So, you know, and they don't want to play, I don't think, the frantic style that Memphis would like to play, but they like to mix up some defenses, and they do throw some defenses at people that confuse teams. So it'll be a lot of fun. Listen, I know you're busy. Thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Neil.
Thanks to Mark Giannotto for the time. On Thursday, when that was recorded, again, Ole Miss and Memphis tomorrow at noon from FedEx Forum. A big one for both teams as the Rebels really step up in class the next four games or so with this. The Barclays Center, they face Penn State, and either Syracuse or Oklahoma State. And then the home game December 3rd with Butler. So that covers basketball for the day. We'll get to a couple bills to be paid, and then we'll go into Ryan Brown to talk football for the remainder of the show.
The Oxford Exxon podcast is brought to you by Splinter Creek. It's a gated conservation community located 8 miles southwest of Oxford, 75 minutes from the Memphis airport. The website, splintercreekms.com, phone number 601-898-2772. Call that number, schedule a tour with Tom Smith Land and Home Agents today. If you're thinking about moving to Oxford, retiring in Oxford, you owe it to yourself to take a look at Splinter Creek. splintercreekms.com. 601-898-2772, 34 lakefront lots, 2 to 25 acres each, 650 acres of lakes, pine, and hardwood forest, 6 miles of private roads. It's an absolutely gorgeous property. You should check that out if you're thinking about moving to Oxford or the Oxford area. SplinterCreekMS.com. Dead Soxy has expanded its collegiate line. Get in the action. Check out all of their newly listed color patterns. Regardless of your allegiance and their allegiance, those disowned relatives need Christmas gifts too. So go to DeadSoxy.com, DeadSoxy.com, and check out their new collegiate line. And as always, enjoy the Rebel Grove savings of 30% off with promo code Rebel Grove. Dead Soxy, stay Soxy. We're now 5 weeks away from Christmas. Don't let yourself be the person that gets caught in the hustle and bustle of last-minute shopping. Our friends at Blue Delta are offering gift cards for their bespoke raw denim jeans for $100 off. This is a great way to treat your friends and family with a great Mississippi-made product for the holidays. Drop by the Oxford Studio to purchase or get in touch with Blue Delta Jeans on their social media at info@bluedeltajeans.com to have a gift card mailed to you anywhere in the world. And if you guys are in the Austin, Texas area today, get in touch with Blue Delta. They're there. They'll get you fitted. All you got to do is give them a call or jump into their social media or email them info@bluedeltajeans.com. We're also brought to you by Southern Craft Stove and Tap, located off Highway 7 and Sisk Avenue. Southern Craft Stove and Tap places an emphasis on food and atmosphere, mixing the quality of fine dining with the come-as-you-are environment. featuring 30 craft beers and offering a high-quality selection of cuisine and libations. Southern Craft Stove and Tap has you covered for any occasion. Join them for lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch, or have your favorites catered out. Catering orders placed online currently receive $25 off any order totaling $100 or more. So avoid the chaos of parking on the square. Head over and experience carefully crafted dishes with your favorite Southern ingredients. Southern Craft Stove and Tap, Highway 7 and Sisk Avenue in Oxford. Ryan, as always, appreciate you being with us, especially here on this Friday morning. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's always fun, Neil. And unfortunately, we're closing in on the end of football season. So we need to cherish these moments together, you and I.
Tua Tagovailoa's season ended a lot sooner than anyone, Tua or anyone else, wanted it to end. It was striking to me how, as the news got out, and you could tell right away it was bad, and as the news got out that it was really bad, you could tell just how much even people who cheer against Alabama, how much people enjoyed watching him play, kind of the joy that he plays with, the way that he made, you know, frankly, during the beginning of the Nick Saban years, at times, they were a great team, but they weren't a very fun team to watch. And Tua, while they were still a great team, he made Alabama a lot of fun to watch. And watching him carted off that field, and subsequently we hear the news about it, the season-ending injury and the surgery and all that stuff, just how generally sad everybody was. And I can only imagine what it's been like inside the state of Alabama, where college football is such a big deal there. And Tua has been as big of a deal as anyone that I can remember coming out of that state in a long time. What has just kind of been the week been like for you as a guy that does a talk radio show there and is so ingrained in, you know, Alabama and Auburn and SEC football in the wake of Tua's injury?
So to your point, this is literally one of those deals where I was too close to the situation to, I guess, understand how well-liked he was nationally, because what you said was true, but it also surprised me. I was a little taken aback by the national reaction to this, and I think there are a couple things at play. I think, number one, what you said is he was just a fun player to watch, and, you know, he approaches the game with a great attitude. From everything I can gather, that he's a tremendous person. I've dealt with him one-on-one a couple times, in interview situations, but I've never spent a considerable amount of time around him. But just talking to people in Tuscaloosa, they absolutely love him. And, you know, I think that is at play. And I think a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, I think almost anyone that is a normal human being, no matter who you pull for, you hate to see a great player cut down by injury. You hate that. Nobody wants to see that. And I don't think anybody really wants to win a game that way either. I mean,
no.
You want to try to beat a team at full speed, at full steam, so you get the credit you want. So, yeah, I think those things were at play. And, yeah, it was really difficult to watch. You know, watching it live, like you said, the longer he stayed on the ground, the more you knew it was more than just a bloody nose. You know, if it's a bloody nose, you can get up and run over and grab a towel. He wasn't getting up. And the longer that drug on, the more you feared, the more you feared it was the ankle again. I never even thought about a knee or a hip. So, yeah, I mean, it was tough to watch. And to your question about the reaction in the state, I really didn't know what to expect Monday during our show, because Auburn lost to Georgia, which, you know, is just another strike against Gus Malzahn, and knew that was going to be a topic. Alabama fans were kind of a mixture of heartbroken and some upset, you know, that Tua Tagovailoa was even in the game or in the game at that point. So I just didn't know what the reaction would be. And there was much less of the blaming of Saban, really, than I thought there would be. It was primarily just, God, I hate it. How does this affect our playoff chances? Honestly, that's kind of the reaction we've had all week. You know, well, what does Mac Jones have to do against Auburn to sink down them in the playoffs? So we've done a lot of that radio this week.
You mentioned Saban and all that stuff, and I was one of the people that initially said he shouldn't have been out there. The game was in hand. He was coming off that ankle injury. That last image that you have of him, of the LSU-Alabama game, the classic in Tuscaloosa, is Tua Tagovailoa basically not having to be helped off the field, but boy, he wasn't moving very well. And then
he was limping. Yeah.
And then a few days later, he's playing in a game. The game's over, and you knew very early there is a 0.0% chance that Mississippi State upsets Alabama today. It's not happening. And I thought, why is he still on the field? And I still, and even though some people have talked to me away from that with, hey, you know, of course he was going to finish the half, and they were working on the two-minute thing, and he wanted to go in. I still haven't completely absolved Nick Saban from blame, if I'm honest. Am I wrong, or is there one of those things where everybody's a little wrong and everybody's a little right?
Yeah, I mean, that may be the case. I mean, I don't think Nick Saban has absolved himself, and I don't know that he ever will. From talking to a lot of people, I think this is one that will affect Nick Saban maybe forever, especially if this really, really diminishes the remainder of his career or his draft stock. It was, you know, it's hard for me to speak how I felt about this, because let me be completely transparent. I was in the passenger seat of a car going from Birmingham to Auburn for the Auburn-Georgia game. So I'm watching the game, and Neil, you've made that drive before. You're going in and out of rural areas, so, you know, the cell service isn't always great. So I'm watching the game on my phone. It's 14-0. I mean, like a minute and a half into the game, you knew it's over. It is over at that point. Alabama's just going right up and down the field. So I had kind of checked out a little bit, but I did say I'm going to watch it till at least Tagovailoa leaves the game, just to be sure that it hurt. And I had lost the signal for a moment. It comes right back as he's getting injured. So I never really went through the, oh my God, why is he still in the game thoughts, because my signal was going in and out. So it's really difficult for me to tell you how I felt at that moment. You know, Saban's philosophy has always been, and this is, he's coached this way from day one, is that I'm going to play my starters the first half. We're going to go into the locker room, and I'm going to bring them out, and I'm going to play the first possession, because I don't want them to get out of the rhythm of play, 20-minute break, play. I want to keep that rhythm going. Now, you can debate whether that's a good strategy or not with star players or starters, or, you know, guys that might be a little bit nicked up, but it's the way he's always coached. He's been very consistent in that. There have been many times where, in a game that was even more of a blowout than that Mississippi State game, where starters have come back out in the second half, and I'm like, wow, I cannot believe they're taking snaps here, but that's the way he's always done it. Now, that said, I don't even think he was going to do that with Tagovailoa, because he said it had not been a two-minute situation, he was coming out of the game.
Okay, so let's turn. First of all, what are you hearing? Because I know you guys are hearing more up-to-date stuff. He's going to have a complete recovery and play football again at a high level. Is that realistic at this point, or is that pie in the sky?
Well, I think it's realistic. I think, first of all, a lot of people feared the first thing, and I don't know if you got a lot of this over in Mississippi, but here in this state, the Bo Jackson injury and the career-ending injury for Bo Jackson, you know, stays on a lot of people's minds. Even Alabama fans, they knew how great Bo was. And so the immediate reaction was, oh, my God, it's a Bo Jackson injury. This will end his career. Well, it's not. Bo Jackson, what happened to him, for those who may not remember, is his hip partially popped out. He had it pop back in and never sought treatment, because he thought, oh, my hip popped out, I popped it back in, doesn't really hurt that bad, I'm going to keep playing. And what happened was, lost blood flow to the bone, so his bone started deteriorating, and that's what ended his career. And that is not at all what happened to Tua Tagovailoa. In fact, his hip came all the way out of socket, and they reduced it, they relocated it, put it back in socket on site there in Starkville before he ever flew to Birmingham. So that's not really a huge concern.
Can you imagine how bad that hurt?
Oh, I cannot. My wife, who has a history in orthopedics, demonstrated for me how that works. And I don't know. I mean, I know they give them painkillers, Neil, but you got to remember now, he gets injured, and there is, I don't know, maybe 3 minutes that has passed before he is in the locker room and they're relocating his hip. I don't know that you can take enough pain medicine for it to wear off that quickly.
Whew. Okay, so it's the season goes on. That's one of the things we learn in life and in sports and in everything else. Time marches on. It's Mac Jones. Tell me about him. Is he good enough to get Alabama past Auburn?
I don't know. That remains to be seen, because all we've seen of him is against Arkansas, and that is obviously not a very good mode of judgment. But, you know, look, Mac Jones is a talented guy. He was a four-star guy that was recruited fairly heavily. And, you know, as I point out to people, he is, after all, a Nick Saban quarterback recruit. So, I mean, it's not as if this guy is terrible. Nick Saban doesn't generally sign bad players, and Mac Jones wasn't really signed as just an afterthought. He was, you know, part of a recruited class. And, you know, I think you have to remember that this is a Nick Saban player that he recruited and he signed. So Nick Saban obviously felt a great deal of him. And, I think he certainly is capable. Is he good enough to go to a place like Auburn and win that game? I do not know. I mean, that is a really, really, you know, it's a really difficult place to play in big game situations. And that is a really, really good defense. So I'm not entirely certain if he is or not.
All right, we touched on Auburn. Let's get to the other huge story that you all are talking about, and it's not going away for a while. The Tua thing will fade, especially now that people believe that he's going to be okay and all of that. Gus Malzahn doesn't beat Georgia. They're down 21-0. They come back and make it super interesting, but ultimately they don't get it done, and they lose a game in the way that Gus doesn't need to lose games. He could lose a shootout right now, and I think everybody would be okay with it, but losing these close games because his offense can't get it going is problematic for him moving forward. Yet there's all the stuff with his buyout and all of those things. In your opinion, and we'll dive more into it here in a minute, in your opinion, is Gus Malzahn, assuming a win over Samford, of course, is Gus Malzahn coaching for his job against Alabama?
That's difficult to say, because, you know, that's kind of a complex question, because, number one, you know, if he loses to Alabama, and you look at it, you know, in a broad sense, he is 8-4, which is about what everybody expected of him. And then you look at the four, there aren't a lot of bad losses. There are no bad losses in there, in fact. I mean, you lost to Florida, where you didn't look good in the loss, but, you know, a top 15 team. You lost to LSU. Everybody lost to LSU, including your in-state rival. And you played them about as well. Actually, you did. You played them as well as anybody's played them. You know, you lost to Georgia, who is going to be in the SEC championship game. And while it was ugly at one point, down 21-0, you came back and you made it 21-14. And then you would have lost to Alabama, and assuming it's not a blowout, I don't think it would be. You've lost to four teams in the top 15. You may be the fifth best team in the Southeastern Conference, which is not where Auburn wants to be, but I think you kind of have to look at it, you know, if you look at it from 35,000 feet, well, you did that with a freshman quarterback. You know, the offense has room to grow. So that's the pluses, okay? Here's the minuses. Auburn loses a lot in this offseason. That entire defensive line is gone. They're going to lose the entire offensive line. You know, they're going to lose some skill players. This is going to be a tough offseason for Auburn. So in a lot of senses, you kind of hit the reset button. And there's a faction of people in Auburn that want that reset button to be hit with another coach. It's not that Gus Malzahn is bad. It's not that he's losing to teams he shouldn't lose to. It's that he's just not playing the style of football they hired him to play. It's a struggling offensive team that wins on defense, and that's just not what they hired Gus Malzahn for. And that's where he gets most of his all of his criticism, really, is his offense. And that is just so weird, because for a long time, that's all he had was offense, and he struggled a little bit on defense. But Kevin Steele kind of flipped that around. So it's really difficult to say that he's coaching for his job. If this loss made him 7-5, I would say, yeah, he's probably in trouble. If it made him 6-6, I'm not sure he'd be around to coach the game. But at 8-4, I think that's about where everybody had him pegged. And by the way, if they have to win the game, which is a very distinct possibility, he's 9-3. That's actually a pretty good year, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, if you had told the average Auburn fan at the beginning of the season, no details, you don't get to ask any questions, but here's the set of facts that I'm willing to tell you. You're going to go 9-3 and you will beat Alabama at the end of the season. Take it or leave it. I think 90% would have said done.
Yeah, I think 90% would have said, yeah, what probably means we lose to LSU, Georgia, and Oregon. Yeah. I don't know that they are, maybe Florida, you know. Okay, we'll accept those. You know, the Georgia loss, now that's a big loss. Gus Malzahn does not have a good record against Georgia, Alabama, and LSU. And those are his three biggest games every year. And he is 2, oh my God, I don't have it in front of me, but he's 2, I think 2-5, 2-5, 2-5. Or 2-6, 2-6, yeah. And now 2-5. Whatever.
If he loses, to Alabama next Saturday, he is 6-16 in his last 22 games against those three teams.
Yeah, so that is not acceptable. And there's never been a time where that's acceptable as the Auburn football coach. So, you know, I mean, you would have to look at it from that perspective, too. But I think if you said you beat Alabama, most Auburn fans probably think, oh, we knocked Alabama out of the playoffs. You know, we'll take that. So, yeah, I mean, if you're 9-3 with a win over Alabama, I think every Auburn fan in the offseason would have said that's a step in the right direction. And the future would look promising with Bo Nix. It just doesn't feel that way right now. Bo Nix hasn't really progressed an awful lot. He looks just marginally better than he did against Oregon. And I think a lot of people fear him behind the rebuilt offensive line next year. It's I don't know, it's tricky for Gus Malzahn. That's why a lot of people now think if he's got the opportunity again to jump to Arkansas, he might just choose to jump to Arkansas this time.
Isn't it funny how it's changed in 2 years? 2 years ago.
Absolutely.
2 years ago, he played the Arkansas opening.
Yep.
To get this massive contract and all this security at Auburn. And to his credit and Jimmy Sexton's credit, man, they won that negotiation in spades. I mean, just won it running away.
And
here we are 2 years later, and Gus might need Arkansas to come after him. And in this scenario, if Arkansas did come after him, Auburn, being the university, if you will, without a shadow of a doubt, would say, oh, yes, please, you should go. You absolutely should take the job, and there would be no resistance. Yet what I hear on both fronts is that if it were up to Gus, he would stay at Auburn. It's a better job. Everybody knows that. And then on the other front, and maybe you know more than I do, and if you do, please feel free to share it with our listeners. I'm not sure that Arkansas, the entity Arkansas, which of course is lots of people and boosters and stuff, I'm not sure that that's is it not unanimous that they want him? I'm not sure there's a plurality that want him.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem he runs into at Auburn is, first of all, there has been a total administration change. President has changed recently. It's back to an interim with Jay Gooch, who was there years ago. And athletics director has changed since the big contract that, as you pointed out, they played Auburn and played them big. You had an inexperienced president. You had a lame duck athletics director. So Jimmy Sexton struck. He knew an athletics director had no power, and a president was panicking because the president knew, oh, my gosh, I'm about to get right in the middle of my most important employee looking for another one, and I don't have an athletics director. I'll do whatever it takes to keep him. And the president went out and drummed up support among a couple of prominent boosters, and basically they guaranteed the 75% buyout that is in Gus Malzahn's contract and the additional money, and Gus Malzahn won. There are a lot of people at Auburn that haven't forgotten that. And they didn't like the way that played out. They thought Gus Malzahn played them, and he did. And they haven't forgotten that. So likewise, I've got to imagine, and I don't know this. You know, you ask, I don't know, Neil. But I got to imagine there's a lot of people at Arkansas that don't like the way he played them, too. They were, like you said, you had to have two sides to play. And both Auburn and Arkansas got completely played in that situation.
The Oxford Exxon podcast is also brought to you by Pinnacle Trust. Pinnacle Trust, based in Madison, Mississippi. It has clients in more than 20 states, has advisors in multiple states. It was founded in 1997, and Pinnacle Trust provides detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and much more. At Pinnacle Trust, investing is treated like a commodity. Decisions are made using objective information and research, not emotions. So regardless of your level of wealth, Pinnacle Trust will sit down with you, listen to your goals, study your expenses, and put forth a comprehensive, detailed financial and retirement plan built just for you. Pinnacle Trust, what they do is they don't put you in a box. They build that plan just for you. And to learn more about them, go to pintrust.com. That's PINNtrust.com. Mention you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the podcast. You get 10% off your first year's fee. We're also brought to you by the Westin Jackson. It's a Marriott property located in downtown Jackson. You can accrue Marriott rewards points there. You can also use your Marriott rewards points there. Be a great place to enjoy a holiday weekend. The Festival of Trees going on there at the Westin Jackson. Be a great place if you're doing business in Jackson, if you're stopping through Jackson. It's the perfect place to stop. It's home to Soul Spots, the ultimate luxury spa experience in downtown Jackson. And it's also home to Estelle Wine Bar and Bistro, where you can sip on a creative craft cocktail or enjoy their curated wine list. It's open for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. Chef Caden's offerings are terrific. You should check them out at Estelle tonight at the Westin Jackson. The podcast also brought to you by John Edwards, Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. If you've been thinking about a golf trip with the guys, anniversary trip, you've dreamed of playing in Scotland or Ireland, or you're thinking about a cruise, a resort in Florida, whatever the case may be, get in touch with John. He's part of Virtuoso. It's a worldwide network of travel partners that allows him to supply his clients with added values and unique benefits simply not available to other travelers. All you got to do, get in touch with him, give him some parameters, give him a budget. He'll give you options that you won't find on your own. And no, you don't have to live in or near Memphis to take advantage of his services. 901-494-3387 or send him an email, jedwards@regencytravel.net. First-time clients can save $50 off their first book trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. The Ole Miss women's hoops team back in action on Craddock Court on Saturday, 2 p.m. as they take on Louisiana Tech. Tickets can be purchased by visiting olemisstix.com. The Ole Miss volleyball team returns to the Gillum Center on November the 27th as they take on Missouri at 6 p.m. Admission is free. More information can be found at olemisssports.com. The 2019 Men's Hoops SEC Mini Plan is on sale now. For just $175, receive a ticket to all 9 SEC home games this season in the pavilion. Visit olemisstix.com. Get your SEC Mini Plan for just $175. Well, and then there's the very legitimate on-field argument that Arkansas people make, and it's legit when the realistic ones say, okay, look, we're going to have a hard time consistently having the talent that Auburn has, and he's not beating those teams with Auburn's talent. It stands to reason that he won't beat them with our talent either. So why should we do that when we maybe should try something new? We should try a younger guy, get a more dynamic recruiter, all of those things. And frankly, that's a valid criticism.
It is. Because it's not, for instance, if they hired Mike Leach, Mike Leach consistently has done it both in Lubbock, Texas and Pullman, Washington with lesser talent than the rest of his conference.
Yeah.
Gus Malzahn hasn't necessarily done that. Now, I think where Gus Malzahn can do that is when he finds a quarterback that is talented enough to run his system, a Nick Marshall. Look, Nick Marshall wasn't going to play quarterback at 95% of the schools on the FBS level, but he was perfect at Auburn. Now, Cam Newton could have played anywhere. Anybody would have had Cam Newton. But Nick Marshall wasn't Cam Newton, but Nick Marshall was exceptionally good at running that offense. So if you put Gus Malzahn a guy like that, I do think that can narrow a talent gap very, very quickly if he can find a quarterback that's proficient in his system. But he's honestly struggled to do that at Auburn. He hasn't consistently had that guy as the Auburn head coach. He had Nick Marshall right away. But since then, Jarrett Stidham was kind of, even though they won the West, he was kind of a square peg in a round hole. Bo Nix hasn't quite developed yet. There was the time between Marshall and Nix where everybody thought Jeremy Johnson was going to be a Heisman Trophy winner. He completely flamed out. So he struggled to find that quarterback post Nick Marshall. And a lot of people thought it was going to be Jimmy Gainwell. A lot of people thought it was going to be a number of recruits, and none of those recruits have really panned out.
Yeah. It's funny, everything that I hear more and more as the days go on, and look, you know how these things change, I don't think that's the direction that the ultimate power brokers at Arkansas are going to choose to go. I know they've done a deep dig on Mike Norvell. I know there are people that are out there that say that Norvell has already said no. That is not what I hear, but now they could be right and I could be wrong. I'm certainly not pretending to be an expert at every school. I know that they've done a deep dig on Matt Campbell, and I've heard it as much from people that don't be surprised if they kind of back the truck up and see if that's enough to get him to jump in. I don't ultimately think Matt Campbell would take the Arkansas job, but it's one of those funny things with Gus is, man, your best bet is to win this game. But on the flip side, it's hard for me to believe. Let's say he loses to Alabama and the lynch mob forms, if you will, not literally, of course, but you know they want change. And Arkansas is not there to bail Auburn out. $26 million in today's economy with shrinking attendance everywhere is a ton of money. I don't care what anyone says. You know, the ability to go out and put up that sort of money, $26 million, and then you've got to – I don't know. Who does Auburn hire in this world where they fire Gus Malzahn, pay him $26 million to not work? And then who do you go get? I mean, and whoever you go get, presumably you want to get somebody who could make a splash, and that person's going to have a buyout, and then that person's going to have to get paid, and he is going to want to bring in his staff. So by the time you're done with this, you might be looking at $40 million.
Which is why there is a school of thought that the obvious replacement would be Kevin Steele, promoting him to head coach. Now, he was head coach at Baylor, and it was a complete and total disaster. He's been a very good defensive coordinator for Auburn and other stops. And a lot of people think that Kevin Steele will kind of be a stopgap guy. Now, I don't like that plan personally, because I don't think anybody thinks Kevin Steele is a long-term answer there. And you go try to recruit against that, that's going to be tough. And, a lot of people think Kevin Steele, you pay him, you know, bargain basement. He keeps a lot of the staff that he likes there. You don't have to buy a lot of those guys out. So basically, you're just buying out Gus Malzahn. You don't have to buy out somebody else's contract to make them a head coach. You know, Kevin Steele goes and finds an offensive coordinator. You got a little bit of money to play with there because you're not paying him a ton, almost the Ed Orgeron model. There are people that think that that's a viable option at all. That's a plan on the table. I don't know, because I'm with you. There's not an obvious guy. There's not an obvious guy. I mean, if I were doing a search today, if I were athletic director at an SEC school that's a prominent school, the first person I would make tell me no is Matt Rhule. I would go to Baylor, I would offer him the moon, and I would make him tell me no, and I would move on from there. I do like Norvell, but Matt Rhule would be my first no. And, I don't know that he would say yes to Auburn. There are people that think that Auburn can get Bob Stoops. I don't think that's the case either. So there is not an obvious guy. No, there isn't a guy that's just out there that you say, oh, yeah, well, that would be the guy you would go hire if you make the fire. By the way, the same's true in Tuscaloosa. Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, the line would start at the door if Nick Saban announced his retirement today. Who wouldn't want that job? But there isn't really an obvious guy. Everybody says Dabo Swinney. I mean, obviously, there are ties there, but that is not cut and dry. There isn't just really this obvious guy that you would go get to replace Nick Saban. It's not always as easy as you would think.
There's no chance we're talking about that at the end of the season, are we?
Saban retiring?
Yeah.
I don't think so, no.
I don't either.
I mean, that rumor's always out there. At the end of the year, a lot of people start talking about, well, you know, he's done everything he can do. This guy's addicted, man. He's addicted to coaching. If you think, I could be, here's another one where, like you said earlier, I could be wrong if you could play this back, you know, a month from now, and I look very foolish. But if you think he's going to retire with a national championship-level team that failed to reach a national championship game, that's a different Nick Saban than I know. That's not the type of thing that drives him into retirement. So I just think the guy is addicted to coaching, and this is not falling off anymore. People have said it is, but the recruiting is still phenomenal. They lost to a team that's the number one team by 5 points when they played like total crap in the first quarter. This team isn't his best team, but this team isn't that far off. Let's don't pretend like this is a 7 or 8 win team. This is still a really good football team.
Oh yeah, it's an exceptionally talented team. It's lost some defensive starters earlier in the year, and they're not as good on defense as I think they thought they would be in August before those injuries occurred.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I think with Dylan Moses and Josh McMillan, this is a different defense. Is it top five? Is it enough to win the LSU game? I don't know the answer to those questions, but I know it's different. Those linebackers have had to learn on the job, and they played well. But that's, you know, there's a lot of ask of an inside linebacker in a Nick Saban defense. And for a freshman to be thrown into that and have to learn on the fly with nobody there with him, that's a heck of a lot to ask of a freshman linebacker. And there have been other issues. That's not the only issue. I mean, there have been other spots. There have been a lot of injuries up front. LeBrian Ray, Raekwon Davis got banged up in the Mississippi State game. He's been in and out a little bit. So, you know, the injuries have not been kind to Alabama on that defensive side by far and away.
And they ran into an LSU team that is an absolute offensive juggernaut. I mean, give credit to them. All season long, they have, you know, I watched them in week one, and I remember telling you this in week one. I was like, man, I ended up watching LSU, and they look good. And then I remember telling you, I'm not convinced that he's got the discipline to let them play that way all a year. And I was wrong. He does, and they have. And they're going to beat Arkansas, obviously. I think they're going to beat Texas A&M, and they're going to go into that SEC championship game against Georgia 12-0 and probably one in the BCS. In your opinion, does LSU have to win the SEC championship game to make the playoff?
No, I think they could afford a loss there. And I do, you know, you got to see it up close and personal. That defense, if I'm an LSU fan, scares me. And look, I know Plumlee has been running it on everybody, and it seems like it would be a simple offense in the world to stop, but nobody can stop it right now. But, I mean, he's basically, Ole Miss is running the wing T, aren't they? I mean, that's basically what they're running.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to get there yet, but let's get there. You watch a lot of football. It is the most bizarre thing I think I've ever covered, where every national person who watches this says, man, this Plumlee thing is incredible. And look, let me do all the caveats here. They get more access to him than we do.
Right.
I know that he is an exceptional kid. No question about it. God, he's a great kid. He's a 4.0 student. He's a two-sport star. He comes from a super family. His parents are awesome people. His sisters are according to everyone I've talked to, super impressive young women. He's a pianist. He can sing a little. He's kind of almost too good to be true in a lot of ways. He's the guy that if that's the guy that your daughter brings home, you're like, hey, yeah, you should probably hang on to him if you can. He's a hell of a runner. All that being said, there is a part of me still, and he's slowly winning me over with his skill set. I don't know what the offense that they're running is called. I've kind of asked around, like, hey, what do you call this? And just Rich Rodriguez's offense with the running quarterback. We're still doing all the things that we were doing at the beginning of the year. And I think, well, boy, it doesn't look anything like what you did at the beginning of the year. But
no.
But, you know, I've always been willing to say two things, Ryan. One, I'm not a football expert, and I don't know, and I've never been afraid to say I was wrong. Because, of course, if you talk, you know this, God, you talk for a living every day, 4 hours a day, you're going to get some things wrong.
Sure.
Know, part of it. So, and as long as you are willing to admit, yeah, I was wrong, it's cool. And there's a chance on this that I was wrong, and there's a chance down the road I'm going to have to say, man, I was really wrong. But I do wonder a couple of things. Against Auburn, nothing happened for three quarters. They were pretty far, a couple scores down, maybe a little more than that, and then Plumlee broke loose. And they made the game super close, and they lost by six with the ball, a chance to win at the end of the game, but they couldn't throw at the end. Against LSU, they got nothing going. Had to even put Corral in for a series or so. They were down 31-7 at halftime. I'm not going to say that LSU was checked out, but it's fair to wonder, an LSU team that had just played this emotional, physical, draining game a week earlier in Tuscaloosa, shows up in Oxford, dominates the first half, up 31-7. I think it's fair to wonder if at the half some guys said, we got this, let's get out of here. And they turned it off a little. And then Plumlee, to his credit, made play after play after play with his feet. And next thing you know, it's almost a game and all that stuff. So it's a long way of getting to this. I don't doubt for a minute that John Rhys Plumlee can be explosive and exciting and all of that as a quarterback. I do doubt Can John Rhys Plumlee be a balanced enough quarterback, or can this be a balanced enough offense for Ole Miss to ever beat the big boys in this league? And when I say the big boys, I mean LSU and Alabama and Auburn and Texas A&M and Florida and Georgia and the teams that you run into in this league. Can you ever beat those kinds of teams with an offense that, to me, looks wildly one-dimensional, even though that one dimension is fantastic? I mean, he can really run it. Jerry and Ely, I think, is going to be a star in this league. Snoop Connor's a solid running back, maybe even better than that, maybe even a very good running back. But it's going to be a young offensive line next season. It's a wide receiver core that has been very disappointing this year outside of Elijah Moore, and they don't throw it much, and he hasn't thrown it particularly well, and maybe he will develop as a thrower to where I look like an idiot in a year from now. And I certainly hope for Ole Miss people who are listening to this that that's what happens, because he would be a fantastic story. But I do wonder if there's enough there to get past a ceiling of 7-5, if you will.
And what I've wondered, too, about him, because you all those are valid questions, obviously, and I don't know, but what I've wondered, too, about him is when does the focus on baseball – I mean, he's a major league talent, right? I'm not wrong about that, am I?
I don't know that I'm willing to say major league. He is good enough. Here's what he is. He's good enough that a couple of Major League Baseball franchises, I think the Minnesota Twins is the one that flirted with it the most. I could be wrong. It could be somebody else, but it doesn't really matter. There were a couple of teams, might have even been the Cubs, there were a couple of teams that were willing to invest in him in the first 10 rounds and pay him over slot because he's a super athlete. That part's you can hate. Okay. You can hate Ole Miss, and you know he's a super athlete. He's plus center fielder. He's got a apparently throwing a baseball a plus arm. He has all the intangibles. He is a
speed to burn, right?
Speed to burn. He's a natural born leader. He's very charismatic. He's very smart. He and apparently is a good hitter. Now, there are some questions about, you know, at the college level, not playing year round, and as we've talked about before, baseball has become as year round a sport as there is. So if he's not playing year round, can he acclimate to SEC pitching in time to really help? But here's the thing. He wants to play baseball. He is going to play baseball. That was part of the deal when he committed to Ole Miss, was that, A, I'll play quarterback, not slot, not defensive back, quarterback. And B, I get to play baseball. And so you have to, as a school, as a football program, you have to honor those things when that's how you got the kid.
Yeah, and that, I guess that's what I was wondering, is at what point maybe he's not a guaranteed major league player. I thought it was a little closer, you know, just the way they talk about him in those telecasts, you know, especially during the Alabama-Ole Miss game, they talked a lot about his baseball prowess, so I assumed maybe it was more of a guarantee that he's a can't-miss major league guy. But it would be safe to say, would it not, that he is far closer to a can't-miss major league guy than a can't-miss NFL guy, right?
Yes, there's no doubt that he's more his skills and his body, his frame are definitely it's far more likely that he ends up being a Major League Baseball center fielder than he is an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, so that's what I was wondering all along with him, is at what point does he say, okay, this playing quarterback is fun, you know, but here we are, we're going 5-7, 6-6, and we're fighting to get to a low tier bowl game. And I'm risking injury doing this, and an injury that could not derail an NFL career, but an injury that could derail a Major League Baseball career. So that was always my question about him, is how long does he stick with this? How long is he committed to being the quarterback and doing what it takes to be an SEC quarterback, and also play baseball, where it looks like your future is? So I guess that was my concern with him all along, Neil, is how long can he do both of these things at an elite level? It seems really good. I mean, who's doing that anymore? I mean, I guess Kyler Murray did it, right?
Yeah, he did.
No, he didn't play baseball, but no, he had a pro contract, so he didn't play baseball at Oklahoma, did he?
No, did he play 1 year before he did the pro
contract? Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But, you know, I mean, he was, you've seen Russell Wilson went and played some minor league ball in the summer, obviously, and then played at a very elite level at Wisconsin. I mean, Kyler Murray did the same thing. But to do it collegiately and then not have the time to commit in the wood bat leagues and things like that, I just, it seems like that stunts your growth a little bit as a major league player. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's what it seems like to me anyway.
When you watch that offense, let's take all the Plumlee baseball stuff out of it. When you just watch that offense, is it enough to beat the good teams in the league?
I think it's enough if you catch an Auburn in a weird game like they did, where Auburn went up and down the field. I think Auburn had 500 plus yards.
Yeah,
that was the weirdest stat game ever. Bo Nix had 300 plus passing yards and no passing touchdowns. That's hard to do, to throw for 300 yards and not throw a touchdown pass is hard. And Auburn had the weird turnover; they gave up a kick return. So it was a weird game. I mean, I think that's the type of game you're going to win, where your defense didn't necessarily shut them down, but they just didn't take advantage of their opportunities. They got a kicker that's, you know, missing kicks all of a sudden, and they give up a long kick return to you. It takes those types of things, I think, in that situation. I just don't think Ole Miss is going to have a good enough defense. McIntyre has improved it, but are they going to have a good enough defense to slow down an Alabama, an LSU, an Auburn, a Florida, a team like that enough that Plumlee can just run up and down the field and 35 points is enough to win a game? That's, to me, I think it's a good enough offense to spring an upset like that. I mean, how many did they score in Alabama? Was it 28? Or was it in the 30s, huh?
31 points, maybe? I don't remember the exact score.
Maybe that was it. But, I mean, that's not even close enough to win a game in Tuscaloosa. So, I mean, to me, it doesn't concern me. The defense does.
The Oxford Exxon Podcast is also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, no 10 buttons to push, no 5-minute wait. What there is Kasasa. It's the absolute best cash checking account. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000 and refund ATM fees nationwide. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out LiveOxford, bankoxford.com, or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And we're brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford for more than 40 years. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. He's also a big part of Savannah Square. It's a new 9-acre development, 0.7 miles from the Oxford downtown square, conveniently located east of North Lamar, just a short stroll from the Midtown Shopping Center. If you are thinking about moving to Oxford, retiring in Oxford, relocating, whatever the case may be, you owe it to yourself to check out Savannah Square. The model home is at 215 William Street. Harry will show you that. He'll also show you several homes that are in different stages of development. They all have wonderful layouts, impeccable finishes, and you can look at those at the model. It's SavannahSquareOxford.com or give Harry a call or text 662-801-5621. And we're brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today, and tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast. You'll get Rebel Savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Also brought to you by Elite Dental Care, with offices throughout West Tennessee in Germantown, Jackson, and Trenton. Elite Dental Care has 5 doctors, more than 75 years of combined experience, and with their different areas of expertise, the doctors at Elite Dental Care offer convenience along with the latest in technology. It's a family practice, so the entire family can be seen no matter age or severity of problems. Elite Dental Care focuses on staying up to date with all the latest technology, including intraoral cameras, digital x-rays, and impressions, 3D x-rays, and more. They offer both conscious sedation and IV sedation for patients that are anxious or scared, or for those that might not be fearful but just don't have a lot of time and need to get it all done in one visit. So if you're looking for a dentist in West Tennessee or the Memphis area, call Dr. Mark Harper, Dr. Clint Buchanan, and Dr. Mike Farah at Elite Dental Care. It's EliteDentalCare.com. And we're brought to you by the College Corner. It's your one-stop Rebel Shop, now with two locations in the Jackson area in Ridgeland next to Fleet Feet, and the new location in Flowood next to Half Shell. If you don't live in Jackson, it's not a problem. You can visit them online at CollegeCornerStore.com, plus Facebook and Instagram. They've got you covered for all your tailgate and home gate needs. Mention Rebel Grove at checkout. You get 15% off your entire purchase. You can also use it online. Just put Rebel Grove in the coupon tab at checkout to get the same discount. CollegeCornerStore.com. And that game was another one of those games that I'm talking about. There's a lot of capital put into that game, and yet I don't remember the exact score, but at some point Alabama was up, I don't remember, 40-something to I don't know. It was the game was.
Yeah, it was. That game was over quick.
The game was long gone, and I'm not taking away from his plays at all, because he had to make those plays, and he definitely made those runs against Alabama players. And like you said, Nick Saban doesn't sign bad players, so he made those plays against good players. The only thing I kind of wonder, summing up this portion of it, I do sort of wonder. Yeah, he's got to make improvements, because this offseason, especially, you know, they open with Baylor, they play Auburn early, they play Alabama early, they play LSU early. All of those teams, they're going to spend some time in the offseason getting ready for the first five or six opponents, because that's what coaching staffs do. And when they look at Ole Miss, they're going to strategize ways to force him to throw the football, I think.
Well, I would think so. I mean, I think, you know, until he proves he can beat you, especially beat you deep with a pass, you just load up and spy him, and maybe spy him with two guys. And you don't have to worry about a big pass rush, because he's not going to stand back there and throw, so you don't risk getting rushers up the field and leaving run lanes for him. I'm with you. I think, you know, you kind of bracket him and make him throw the ball on you until he can prove he can throw the football. I think these SEC defensive coordinators, given an off season, will devise a plan that slows him down. That would be my fear. Yeah, if I'm Matt Luke or Rich Rodriguez, that's what happens in this off season.
And again, before anybody yells at me for being negative, if he proves people like you and me wrong, it's a great story. He's a great
unbelievable.
He's the kind of kid that you cheer for. I mean, you'd love to see a kid that is so charismatic and such a really neat kid, neat person. You'd love to see those kinds of people have success. And we touched on the playoffs. Let's kind of get back to that, because I want to get your thoughts. Obviously, you've got LSU in it, barring a disastrous loss to Arkansas or A&M. Georgia can obviously get in it by beating LSU. That would put them in it, assuming they beat Georgia Tech. Is it kind of that cut and dried? I mean, Clemson's in as long as they don't stumble, and Ohio State's in as long as they don't stumble?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think if Ohio State can beat Penn State, Michigan, and either Minnesota or Wisconsin, even if they lose one of those games, you know, I think a one-loss Big Ten champion Ohio State's in. There's scenarios where, as crappy as Clemson's schedule is, if Clemson lost a game, they might still make it as long as they win the ACC. Now, that's, you know, I guess South Carolina's the one remaining game they've got. So if Georgia can get in with the South Carolina loss, I guess Clemson can. I think an SEC champion, Georgia, is in, and if it's LSU's only loss, I'm not so certain you don't have LSU and Georgia in at that point. You know, everybody over here wants to make a case for Alabama. It's a tough case to make, just because, you know, Alabama doesn't have any good wins to show. No, their best win's Texas A&M. Now, that's the same best win that Clemson has, but Clemson's undefeated and is going to be a conference champion. But when your best win, sorry, my dog's barking. When your best win is Texas A&M, you don't have a whole lot to hang your hat on. And I think that's what's really hurting them right now, is that there's just no, they don't even have that good out of conference game. That, you know, the game was Duke, and that's just not enough. And I think that's, you know, that is Alabama's big downfall, is there's just nothing to fall back on once you lost that game to LSU. So, yeah, I do think it's pretty cut and dry. LSU is going to have to fall apart not to make this thing. Georgia's going to have to win the SEC to make it. I think Ohio State has a game in hand, and Clemson may even against South Carolina.
So, if it comes down to one spot, let's say LSU pops Georgia in the championship game, they get a spot. Let's say in this scenario, Ohio State goes undefeated, they win the Big Ten. Clemson goes undefeated, they win the ACC. Does it come down to, for Alabama, style points against Auburn? Does it really matter at this, at that point, what Mac Jones looks like?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know the definition of style points. You know, we've had this discussion, so. Let me walk you through my kind of theory on this, because we had this discussion on our show. If Tua Tagovailoa were in this game, if he were the starting quarterback in this game, what do you think Alabama would have to do to get into the playoffs? Do you think they would just have to beat Auburn?
Yes.
And I'm asking you this question.
Just win the game.
Just beat Auburn.
Just
win the game.
Yeah.
So if they win, if they field goal, as time expires, win by one, which is an unlikely way for Alabama to win a game, but in the event they did that, they're in.
Is it bad that when you say that, I think, oh, wouldn't that be awesome? Not to torture a fan base, but if it came down to an Alabama-Auburn game and Alabama lines up for a 33-yard field goal down 21-20 with 3 seconds left, is it bad that I would sort of enjoy the collective angst of moment for Alabama fans?
There's literally no one in this state that would be comfortable. No Auburn fan or Alabama fan would be comfortable in that situation.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah. The entire state would be in it. But there's this school of thought then. So Tua Tagovailoa wins this game, and they're in, maybe. But there's this school of thought that Mac Jones has got to win this game by 20 and prove that. So it's weird to me that the Mac Jones level is higher than the Tua Tagovailoa level. Like, Mac Jones has to do more than Tua would have had to do, and it's just kind of a weird spot for me, because I kind of look at it this way. If I'm on that committee, and Mac Jones comes in and Alabama wins, I say, okay, you got a guy that has barely started, barely played, really, and he goes to one of the most difficult venues in college football. It's a team that we as a committee, we've had them in the top 15 every week we voted. To me, that says this is a really good Alabama team. I mean, they lost one of the best players in America, and they barely missed a beat. They go beat their rival, difficult place to play. See, to me, just a Mac Jones win almost shows you that those other 21 guys are even better maybe than you thought, because you've taken away maybe the best football player in America, one of them, and they barely missed a beat. So to me, just a Mac Jones win almost shows you that Alabama probably is a little better than people think.
I completely agree with you. Now, the other side of it, and this is the human part of it, when they say, God, we're going to get killed if we take 11-1 Alabama with no real good win on their schedule. A couple of good wins. A&M's okay. Auburn's okay. Because at that point, those are 4 and 5 lost teams. Over, let's say, 12-1 Big 12 champ Oklahoma with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. Over, let's say, 12-1 Pac-12 champ Oregon with Justin Herbert at quarterback. Those teams nationally are probably seen right now with Mac Jones at quarterback as more entertaining / exciting to watch than Alabama.
Yeah, and you know, look, this committee is made up of humans, and they have human reactions, and I think those, you know, there is a fear of that, obviously, and the reaction is going to be nationwide. It doesn't matter. Alabama's in this thing. This is their tournament. They're in this thing every year. It doesn't matter what they do. They don't have to beat anybody. They don't have to have any significant wins. They can take a loss. They don't have to win their division. They can have a backup quarterback. It just doesn't matter. So just start with Alabama in this thing and playing 3 other teams. That's going to be the reaction. And does this committee want that to be their legacy? I don't know. A lot of people like to talk about how this committee operates. One thing, Barrett Jones was on our show today, and Barrett went through, you know, they have the media he went through, and he's got to know some of the people in the committee. He made a great point. He said, when have you seen anybody from this committee say, hey, let me tell you what really happened in that room? You know, this what is it, 12, 13, 14 people, whatever it is, every year? And really, you've had no significant leaks that have said, oh, you know, Barry Alvarez was the guy that was pumping the table for the Big Ten, or, you know, Rob Mullins, he could say he recused himself when Oregon was talking about it. He didn't. You really had none of that. So it's really difficult to know, other than the way this committee is charged to think, it's really difficult to know how they actually do think when the chips are down.
Last two things, and I appreciate all the time you've given us. Let's say my scenario comes to play and they have to pick one of those three teams. You know where I'm going with this. Is this the impetus to them saying, hey, look, you can make a compelling argument for Alabama, but you can make a compelling argument for Oregon, and frankly, you can make a compelling argument for Oklahoma, and now that I think about it, you can make a compelling argument for 11-1 Minnesota that barely lost one game on the road against a pretty good Iowa team, and you might even be able to make a compelling argument for 11-1 Baylor that barely lost at against Oklahoma, who's in this scenario, maybe that's the team that they take. Is that the path to them sitting in that room and saying to all the power people, hey, look, if we're going to do this, where this is doable, I mean, this works, I get it, but everybody wants football. Maybe we should expand this thing out to 8 and eliminate some of the mistakes.
Yeah, and I think there's some obvious questions there. Number one, you know, is round one played on campus after the championship games?
I think it would have to.
I would agree with you. I don't think you can ask fan bases to travel three times that way. There's no way you would sell the tickets. Number two, and I think this would be a mandate from the conferences, does it include automatic conference champions? In other words, does every conference champion get an automatic berth? Are you going to be able to stomach an 8-4 Northwestern springing an upset and taking a spot in his playoffs? I mean, I don't think the conference's meal will ever go for it if it doesn't include an automatic berth for the conference champion. And that does, by the way, help, you know, your conference championship games carry much more meaning. If you know you're playing for a spot in the playoffs, those conference championship games, the SEC is always big, but it ramps up the Pac-12 even more, and the Big 12 and all those things.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you have to answer that question. And I think the other question you have to ask and answer is what happens with the non-Power 5 teams? What happens with the Group of 5 teams? Because my theory, Neil, has always been that we're on the destiny of college football is that the Power 5 schools plus Notre Dame, maybe plus BYU, maybe plus a few others, split off and create yet another subdivision. And you've got the distinct divide, or not a distinct divide, an actual divide between the Power 5 and the Group of 5. And the Group of 5 may have their own playoff and play for their own championship if they want to, but the Power 5 is going to operate as an autonomous body. I honestly think before you and I retire from doing what we're going to do, we're going to see that. And I'm not so certain that that might not be the first step towards it, is the 18 playoff. And, you know, why not just keep this money with us and let the Group of 5 do their own thing? We'll do an 18 playoff, and we'll split off and we'll keep all the money.
I would like to just say amen. You must have been in the pew at the Church of McCready, as I've been saying this over the last few. I didn't see you there. I'd like to thank you for your attendance. What I would like is all 5 conference champs get an automatic bid. Period. They're in. They're in. No questions asked. And then you take 3 wild cards. And so in this scenario, it would probably be Clemson. It would be Oklahoma. Let's say Alabama gets the 4. You'd have Oklahoma would make it as a 5 or 6. Oregon would make it as a 5 or 6. That next best Big Ten team, that 11-1 Big Ten team, if it ends up being Minnesota, they'd make it. And then somebody else would make it. You'd play 1 through 4 would play home campus games in a quarterfinal round. And the losers of those games could then accept a bowl bid.
Yeah.
And
I've always said that, and a lot of people say, "Oh my gosh, how meaningless is that bowl?" Well, how meaningless is a bowl anyway?
They're meaningless anyway.
I know, that's what I've always said. But the fans wouldn't travel. Well, I mean, they travel now. Like if Alabama gets left out of this thing, they're going to go to New Orleans to play in the Sugar Bowl. Well, I mean, that's the type of bowl you'd go to.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you're going to travel to it now, why wouldn't you travel to it then? That doesn't make any sense.
If you were going to go, yeah, let's take Minnesota this year. Let's say Minnesota goes 11-1, and they're the 8 seed. And Minnesota goes to LSU for a quarterfinal game the first weekend of December and loses. Are you telling me that the Minnesota fans are not going to go to the Citrus Bowl?
Yeah.
I don't believe you. I think they would they as many go? Maybe not. I don't know. Is the Citrus Bowl less attractive at that point? I don't know. It's at 11 o'clock in the morning on New Year's Day. The same hungover people who watch it now will be hungover watching it then. I mean, it's the only playoff, the only bowl games that, quote, matter, end quote, are the two semifinal games and the championship game. That's it. The other ones, you can make an argument that none of them matter at all. Like, for example, let's say Ole Miss beats Mississippi State and gets an APR bowl game. I mean, I think even Ole Miss fans would admit this. Who outside of a handful of diehard Ole Miss fans would argue that the game matters?
Yeah. Anybody that bets money on it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. I mean,
that's it. It's going to
be bowl games. Yeah.
It's going to be on for people's Christmas parties and New Year's parties, and people are going to gamble on it. And hey, look, there's App State versus Michigan State. Why not? I mean, that's.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, the only people that the only games that we're going to be dialed into as media, as fans or whatever, are the games that mean something. So why not add
Why not add
four more games that mean something?
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess you in your plan, in the McCready plan, McCready 2020, you would keep the committee just to do the seeding, right? I mean, the committee at that point does the seeding and picks the three wild cards.
Yeah, and here's the thing. So, like someone says, well, who would be the eight seed? I don't know. And someone goes, well, maybe it's a two-loss team, and then how do you pick among the two-loss teams? This is where it's easy for me, and this is very pragmatic. I say, yeah, some two-loss team might get screwed, but don't lose twice.
Yeah, exactly. Be a one-loss team or be an undefeated team.
Yeah,
I agree 100%.
So when you're trying to divide, because someone says, well, you know, Alabama, if they played Utah, Utah's an example. Alabama, if they played Oregon, would win. Okay. I probably agree with you.
Yeah.
But if you said, okay, Alabama, if they played Oklahoma, would win. Here's the best argument I can make, because that might be your 4-5 game. You know what? You're probably right. Wouldn't you love to see it actually happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can answer that.
Yeah.
We should find the actual answer, yeah.
I mean, are you telling me that nobody would watch 5th-seeded Oklahoma at 4th-seeded Alabama, Jalen Hurts going against his old team in Tuscaloosa in a national quarterfinal game? Are you telling me nobody would watch that? Dude, I'm dialed in.
Absolutely.
I mean,
to me,
that's the solution. And yeah, I mean, it's like with the NCAA basketball tournament at the end, we do all the thing with, oh, Dick Vitale screams and yells about some team that got screwed. But, I mean, come on. The team that got screwed usually got screwed out of a 10 seed, and they weren't going to win the tournament anyway. And if you look at their resume, they lost 14 games. And, I mean, yeah, it sucks for the kids, but does it really matter? In most years, the 8 seed, they're not going to do anything anyway, other than it's going to be in this case, a Minnesota-type team, Cinderella sort of a deal, and they're going to get to go play the number one ranked team in the country with a free shot to advance into the big playoff, and if they don't get it, they still get to play another game.
Yeah. I see no downside. And here's the thing I feared about the 4-team playoff. It's not that I was against it, but the thing that worried me was that it would diminish the meaning of regular season games. And the example I always used for Alabama fans was 2012, when Texas A&M, Johnny Manziel, came to Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama. You walked out of that stadium that day thinking, we just lost the national championship. They didn't, because, you know, crazy things happened and got them back in the game. But I don't want to lose that in college football. Well, you know, I worried about that. But to me, the playoff era of college football has given us some of the greatest seasons we've seen. It has been highly entertaining. The games have had meaning. So I don't think you've lost any meaning. And I don't know that adding another game, a lot of people say, well, if you take four more teams, it's going to further diminish. Well, one thing it's going to do is it's going to make every conference championship game vitally important.
Yeah.
And there will be other games that have meaning. You know, the Iron Bowl has got a lot of meaning as it is, but Alabama would be guaranteed as a wild card. I mean, it would be a play-in game for Alabama, the Iron Bowl would be.
Absolutely.
So it would have even more national meaning than it does right now. Right now, it's got a lot of regional meaning. It doesn't necessarily have national meaning. If you had an 8-team playoff, there is no doubt Alabama would be one of your wild cards right now. They would be playing for a playoff berth, and Auburn would be trying to spoil it.
Oh, so, I think it would lead to more scheduling. I mean, here's a great example. Oregon loses that game to Auburn at the beginning of the season. In the last minute of that game, it had to be gut-wrenching, right? And in the old, well, there's, you know, there's just two teams or whatever. They're out. Their season's over. If the goal was to win a national championship, their season ended the same night that it started, and now they've worked themselves back into this scenario where it's possible that Oregon is the number four seed in the playoff, and that would be a cool story. That here's this team that lost on opening night, and they just kept, you know, I mean, whatever. I think all it would mean is once a team lost its first game, once a team lost a game, at that point, man, every game's a playoff, and the right there would be a huge difference in being the three and being the five, because the five goes on the road, the three gets this huge home game on campus and all that stuff. To me, I don't. Other than the potential risk of injury and some of that stuff with kids, and I get that part. I get it big time. But the truth is, the big elite prospects on a let's take Ohio State, loses a quarterfinal game. Their elite prospects probably aren't going to go play in the bowl game, and that's cool.
No, they're going to sit it out.
And that's okay. Yeah. And still, that when they kick off in the Outback Bowl at 10 a.m. on New Year's Day, I go back to what I said a minute ago. The same people hungover who always watch the Outback Bowl are going to sit there, and the Outback Bowl is going to be in their thing. It'll be okay. All right, last thing. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, just real quick, what I would hope would happen in this scenario is that the selection committee would say, you know, obviously your conference champions are in, and that's going to eat up five spots. But these three wildcard spots, we are going to weigh schedule strength heavily in those.
Yes.
And if that was a mandate, then the schools, like you said, they would be forced to schedule big, because you're not risking, you know, you can still win your conference and get it automatically, but you need the insurance policy just in case you don't win your conference. So it would greatly increase scheduling at a conference if that was the mandate they gave them.
You've been a deacon in my church. I just didn't even know it. I mean, you haven't missed a single sermon. It's fantastic to know that my people are listening.
No, I'll send my tithe.
Please do. I'll give you a PayPal. All right. Well, last thing. Who wins this thing? We'll talk again, obviously, before it goes down. But if you had to put all of your money, all of the Brown family Christmas money on one team right now to win the whole thing, who would you put it on?
I think I'd pick Clemson. They have played nobody. I get that. So when people say, well, look at what they're doing though, since that North Carolina game. They have destroyed bad teams, yes, but they have destroyed everybody they've played. And by and large, Trevor Lawrence has quit turning the football over. Their defense is shutting people down. I still think they're the best team in this. I like LSU, but I fear that LSU's defense will catch up with them. I like Georgia, but I fear Georgia's offense will catch up with them. I think Ohio State looks like the most complete team right now, but there again, yeah, they haven't exactly feasted on heavy competition either. So I think Clemson will be rested coming into this. They know how to do it. Trevor Lawrence can be the best quarterback in America at times. So I think I'd still take Clemson right now.
Great stuff. I kept you more than an hour. So thanks so very much for doing this. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and I look forward to talking to you again.
You too. It's always fun, Neil. Thank you.
All right, Ryan. Take care.